IT businesses in Sacramento, California.
From somewhere deep in the cloud and the corners of the earth, this is the Killing It Podcast, with a focus on helping you make sense and dollars of all things IT, with your hosts, Dave Sobel, Ryan Morris, and Carl Polachuk.
Welcome to episode 22 of the Killing It Podcast. So today's going to be, I'm Carl Polachuk. I'm joined by Dave Sobel and Ryan Morris. Welcome as always.
Hey.
Today's a very different sort of thing. So many of you are familiar with Paul Dipple, and if not, we'll tell you in a second who that is. But he had his big mid-year report, and so we're going to like take a chance of being on the edge of a temporal anomaly by analyzing his analysis of the analysis. So
how meta is this? So for background, if anyone is interested, we'll include the link in the show notes, as we do. And kudos to the team at Channel E2E for publishing the webinar that went through this, as well as then Paul's mid-year report card. So you can, at a certain degree, we think you will get some benefit out of this conversation. If you want to really go deep, that webinar should be considered required listening. And I think we'll each comment on kind of why we're all into this. But they did an hour piece presenting the mid-year report card on the IT service provider industry, and a bunch of analysis there. And Joe Panettiere and Paul Dipple had a great conversation diving into this data.
So yeah, if you could like sit down with two people who aren't already part of this podcast, you'd want it to be Joe Panettiere and Paul Dipple.
Right, those guys are smart. So if you're not familiar, Paul runs an organization named Service Leadership, and what they do is they partner with solution providers and with peer groups and such, and they do financial benchmarking. So you can submit your information to Paul. It becomes anonymized. You get back some information about your particular organization's performance, but then he takes all of that data and he number crunches and puts his analysis to it and then tries to look at trends. And he's been doing this for long enough that his data goes back at least to 2005 and probably earlier than that. And he's really got his pulse on the financial performance of this. So for those of us, like the three of us on this podcast, who kind of nerd out on data, this is always a really good set of data points for us to really geek out on. Our choice to dive in here.
Yeah, I first met Paul when I was in HTG.
Right.
And at first, I sort of had this reaction of, why do you need all this data? Because fundamentally, having run my own business and improved my business and so forth and so on, I know I cannot possibly take action on 247 data points. especially I got like a dozen employees. There aren't enough people in my company to make sense of all this. But when you look at it at the aggregate level, it's a whole different animal, because then if you look at all those data points across hundreds, if not thousands, of IT service providers in slightly different industries, and then you do it over time, you get real true data that you can pull some actual meaning out of.
Right. And I actually met Paul, and this will be a great suggestion for you, Ryan, I met you and Paul right about the same time when you guys were touring together for Microsoft promoting managed services. When I was running my solution provider, Microsoft brought you guys in as experts, and baby MSP Dave in the back of the room was just sucking in all this information and met both of you. So, Ryan, you worked with Paul.
Yeah, see, I grew up in this industry working with and learning from Paul. And I think, to Carl's point, maybe one of the most important like shifts in the maturity of our industry overall was the point at which we had actual reference data about business performance, not just about behavioral data, right? It's one thing to track opinion studies. It's one thing to track, you know, 42% of the people do this or that. Yeah, but what is the impact on actual profit performance? Mature industries have that stuff. And prior to what Paul was doing, our industry didn't have that. We had a whole lot of opinion and no evidence on profitability. And so we've been singing this song. And I will tell you, as we go through this conversation today, there's a couple of themes that have been around since the way back days that are continuing to be true. And there are some new, like, oh, hey, we need to really pay attention to a subtle shift in the market because it's about to affect everybody's profitability. This continuing deep dive analysis in business performance, I think everybody in this industry needs to become better on the business side. I don't think we're challenged on the technology side. We're smart people. We can figure that part out. But boy, we need to learn more about business and finance. And Paul's data is one of the central places that I look for that information.
Right. So here we are. We've got a big pile of data. And one of the things, that, so I think in the interest of we're doing analysis and color commentary, so we're gonna pick and choose the bits we want to talk about. Right. The first thing,
you tell people, like, pause this, go watch the webinar, come back.
Yes. So this is your moment. Like, if you haven't watched it, pause right here. Go do that. Now come back. Welcome. So now that you've all done that, you are now all super smart. We're going to dive in. So one of the first bits that jumped out at me on this was that he actually posited a really interesting idea of comparing a 10-year value creation of a product-centric business versus an MSP. Now, again, for those who know on Paul breaks down the industry into various predominant business models so that he can analyze them differently. And so he was comparing product versus MSPs. And there's this kind of this like debate of like, well, which one is better? If you'd put in money 10 years ago, which one would you have gotten more value created out of? And interestingly, if you go by like a strict valuation perspective, you go like, well, the product-centric business is actually doing better. Not to diss on the average MSP, but the average product-centric business would be doing a little bit better. And you look at that, and my first take was, okay. But I think we're glossing over a lot of detail there.
The single most important takeaway from this data is it is not what business you run. It is how well do you run it? And again, Paul and I noticed this many years ago, and it's something that I personally keep track of. The gap between the average and the best in class performer inside the individual business models and across the industry, the gap is better than 2.5 times in every one of these categories, right? And that's just the average. That's, you know, remember, half of all of us are less than average at what we do.
I'm raising my hand. The
reality is that if you run a product business well, you can make much more profit, much more EBITDA than you can running a managed services business averagely, right? To borrow a phrase, to be good at what you do is more important on business operations and execution than it is to just be in the right business model and expect that rising tide will lift all boats. It's not. This stuff is hard, and it matters how well you execute.
Right. And that execution's what jumped out at me too, because I sat back and I said, okay, an average MSP versus an average product-centric business. I think every morning that average product-centric guy has to hustle so much more from a sales and marketing perspective than an average MSP. And I think that's a critically important detail of just the every morning your panic level is going to be way higher because
it's not quite the same as starting over with zero recurring revenue, but it's not far off.
Right. It's because you've got a customer.
Some recurring revenue that there are people who only ever buy their stuff from you, which means they replace all of their laptops every 3 or 4 years.
Right. And if particularly over a period of time, and if you're looking at this over like a 10-year valuation, I would assume in year, say, 9, you have a reasonably good list of people that have bought from you that you can continue to go back to. In year 9, I would hope you're on second or third or fourth upgrade cycle with them based on a average 3-year cycle. Like you've mined this to a level of recurring. but you still have got to hustle a lot. And, you know, there may be bigger rewards, but let's not gloss over the operational side of this, of your level of effort.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is that when you look at, and he makes a point of saying this, like you look at the $3 million hardware company, it's a lot easier to get to $3 million in hardware than it is at $3 million in managed services.
True. Very true.
So, but then you say, okay, but so what's the profit? And that's a different story altogether, right? So there's some level of the hustle there. There's also something we haven't really introduced yet, but you must know, which is the operational maturity level.
Yes. That
part of what's happened is all of these industries, so whether you're an integrator or a service provider or a hosting provider, everybody seems, just as an industry, more mature than they were 15 years ago.
Totally true. And so this is interesting. And for those that do into this, I'm looking at slide 14.
No, I feel more mature than I did 15.
Right. What was interesting is, so Paul made some statements about the fact that the average MSP remained at a what, you know, what he calls an OML 3.4, and he has a five levels five tier OML scale that tells your maturity level, and that can be defined as your ability to execute on a business plan is a simple way of doing that, and thus your operational maturity, thus the name. What was interesting is he comments that it's remained the same maturity level for the second year. What jumped out at me was that how stable the market maturity has been since like 2011. That if we really break this down, you know, between 44 and 47% of the market is in that middle maturity level and has been there for going on 7-8 years now. Now, different individual players may move up and down, right? That's a different statement. But the market as a whole, the bulk of it is right there in the middle. And the numbers in each one are pretty consistent. You look at the graph and it's consistent. And when we talk about the early days, it's like, well, it was changing every year. But now not so much.
Well, it's really interesting. So if you have any statistics background, if you go to slide 14 and you look at 2012 to 2018, if you just look at those and you look at each maturity level, the standard deviation is pretty close to zero.
Right.
It's all levels. And, it's like those are just photocopies of the year before. The other thing that's interesting, 2012, 2011 was very close to that. It was essentially the end of the last recession. We had this maturing during the recession that came to fruition. And then we've been, it's been on pause in terms of evolution since then. Well,
and that's the thing, right? Consistency is good. It indicates maturity and stability. It indicates that across the industry, the pretenders got washed out in that recession, and those who weren't mature but learned how to do it and applied some discipline, they got better. Stability is a good thing until it becomes a habit that prevents us from getting any better. If I look at those numbers in the last 5-6 years, what I see is 1 out of 4 managed service providers is exceptionally good at what they do, and 3 out of 4 are not doing it well enough to thrive and to grow at the level that's available in the marketplace, right? The market is there. The opportunity exists to be attained. You could make a lot more money running your MSP than you presently are. 1 out of 4 of us is doing that very well. 3 out of 4 have not made progress. And I think that's not stability, that's stagnation. And that indicates that there's some execution capabilities. And you got to ask yourself, okay, well, as Dave said, if the average product business appreciated in value more than the average MSP, what are their discipline items that they have to be very good at that the MSP space is not already very good at, and start to adopt those behaviors? It's not just looking around and going, hey, I got recurring revenue coming in at the beginning of the month. I'm fine. I don't have to be scared or panicked and try hard question is, what should you be panicked about?
So, Ryan, how much of that do you think is explained by good is the enemy of great?
That's exactly where it goes. People are comfortable. They are good enough, and they are not striving for excellence. And I think that when you see that across 1 year, 2 year, 3 year, okay, that's interesting. When you see it across 7 years, that's not an accident. That's something that is endemic to the space, and we have to figure out how to jolt it out.
Well, and what's interesting then is that, of course, means, I mean, you look at, say, the people that are listening and go, ooh, I could do something. There is thus opportunity.
Right.
You know, I'm going to take this slightly optimistic view on this, Ryan, and sort of say, so 3 out of 4 people in this space have room to do better and room to do more and room to make more money and room to deliver more in a way that is more exceptional or more trend toward best in class. I think there is nothing from it besides execution that is stopping them from getting to that point.
Yeah, and the question is execution on what? Right? Those are the things that we need to be able to emphasize. And no one listening to this should be surprised when I'm the guy who steps up and says, the difference between those who are thriving at the top and those who are growing aggressively, it's not just because they're good at technology, because almost everybody's good at technology. It's not just that they've deployed systems and capabilities to drive consistency and scalability in terms of their ticket management operations. There's something different, and that different is in their ability to go find new customers. It's marketing, it's sales, it's new customer acquisition, and then current customer expansion. That's something that just industry-wide, you know, people joke about it. I hear it on main stages at conferences all the time. You know, the average channel company is not real good at marketing. Chuckle, chuckle. Okay. That's not funny anymore. That's something
that I know.
Back.
I know, we make it out like it's this big joke. It's like, come on, people. I mean, I saw it was and I won't quote the specific number because I'm sure I'll get it wrong off the top of my head, but I was looking at some numbers that talked about like the average investment in sales and marketing on a typical channel company. And it's like, you know, not very much, like devastatingly not much.
Right.
And so you look and say, well, if you're not actually spending any money and learning and trying, no wonder you're not getting any better at it.
And it's not just marketing and sales. I mean, part of that maturity level is standard operating procedures.
Very true. You,
right. As a coaching coach, right. That one of the things I've seen is that there are people who get really good sized companies. I have coached people who have $5, $7, $10 million companies and no standard operating procedures to speak of. And you think, how is this possible? And how do they get to the next level? And of course, from my perspective, how you get to the next level is you start by creating standard operating procedures.
Right.
I have a friend who is a campaign manager here in Sacramento. And I asked him one time, hey, so what's your win-loss ratio? And he said, let me tell you the secret, the dirty little secret of campaign managers. Every campaign manager has above average, has above 50-50 wins. And I said, how is that possible? And he says, because you run against people who don't have campaign managers.
Right. That's right. So what a great answer.
Competing without the proper procedures in place, you are competing against people who do have SOPs, who have figured it out, have standardized it. One of the easiest ways to continue to grow your company is to standardize what you do so you can go chunk, 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 hire somebody, train them on the process, and let the process work.
See, that is, and I will sing this song until I can't anymore. The only way to rapidly improve the things you do is to know what it is you do. If you do not have documented procedures, you cannot change those procedures because every new change is a guess. You have no idea whether or not you're getting any better or whether you're doing anything meaningfully different until you've documented. We've been spending, Dave and I go back years on this topic of agile in business performance, and we've been teaching this philosophy about how to make small incremental improvements rapidly in order to make the business work more effectively. Agile equals documented procedures. If you don't have documented procedures, you cannot get better. And then when you figure out how to do what you do, please go sell it, right? And again, I'll make a point here back to a slide in the deck, slide 16, if anybody is looking at it. For MSPs, the faster you grow, the higher your profit margin is. That breaks all the rules of logic in business. Usually growth costs money, and the faster you grow, the lower your profits are going to be because you're spending money on growth assets. Yeah, except that the evidence shows when you know how to do what you do and then you go sell it, you actually get to capitalize on your fixed assets and resources. The faster you grow, the higher your profit is, only in the MSP space.
Assuming, by the way, that you put you're building on a good machine, because if you put sales into a bad machine, things go horribly wrong. The other thing is this data that Paul was talking about was this, you know, that the fact that revenue growth by profitability has been going up year over year. So people are, he was using 2014 as a baseline and projecting out, it is getting better and better. That, for me, that's encouraging, right? That means people are getting better at this and they're making more money. But when I then compare against what we're seeing from that maturity level, I just sort of scratch my head and go, more upside here if we focus on that. And, you know, Carl beats on the SOP drum, and he is 100% right. I will make the bridging comment of going, SOPs work everywhere. This isn't necessarily just operations in terms of like your back end or your technical. It is sales and marketing is ultimately just system implementation.
Yep.
I've made the quip many, many times that any marketing system is better than no marketing system. Right. Like, I don't care what one you buy. Really don't buy anything or use anything, because that is better than nothing.
So let me morph a little bit to the sales and marketing piece. We talked about product-centric versus service-centric a little bit. If you are product-centric, you can't survive at the highest levels without a massive sales process.
Oh, yeah.
You have, you know, to get to 3, 7, 9 million, you have salespeople in place whose job is to fight the churn, right? To get out there and go from zero to whatever it is, 100,000 every month, boom, boom, boom. When you have recurring revenue, there's not as much pressure to hire a salesperson until you get to be very, very large. Because for the most part, it's the owner who does most of the sales. And an owner can sell 3, 5, sometimes even 7 million without a lot of help. And so you can delay that by having good sales processes and not trying to have, you know, somebody from the outside sell your stuff. So, but again, if you want to sustain that, you want to grow and you want to take a vacation, at some point you do have to hire somebody else to do your sales. And the more standardized that process is, the more successful it will be.
Absolutely. And look, I mean, you know, I always say, like, one of the best salespeople in any organization is an owner, like, just by its very definition. Just they're more invested. They understand all the details of it. That does not mean you cannot systemize the approach.
Right.
You know, it does not mean you cannot, like, that only the owner can sell. That doesn't mean that. I do always observe, though, that owners are the best salespeople. That's okay. Like, not a problem. But it isn't scalable for that one person to always be doing it. And the owner needs to be making sure that all of the levers and gears of the business are running correctly and executing according to the plan.
Yeah.
In fact, if you're pure product, it's easy to figure out how to motivate salespeople, how their commission should be structured. If you're pure service, it's pretty straightforward, especially if the owner is heavily involved. It's when you mix the two that you begin to have problems, right? And Dell is sort of a vendor example of this, but it's a perfect example. If some people are motivated to make money on products, it's going to be really hard for you to start making money on service.
Oh, I think Ryan has opinions on sales comp.
I have like 4,000 hours of a very like hand waving, passionate conversation about the right way to design sales compensation.
Come on, Ryan, do it in 30 seconds.
The fundamental rule is, if you do not do it on purpose, if you're not managing the compensation plan, you are going to be motivating people to do things against your own best interest as a business. I will go back to this as just kind of a fundamental thing, right? everything in business is a process that can be designed and improved to optimization, including sales and marketing. We refer to it as building a sales engine, right? Because you know what the pieces and parts are. You can fit them together in a way that can perform effectively. But an engine doesn't do squat by itself. And I can't tell you how many businesses we've worked with across this industry that are absolutely brilliant operators. And in a meeting, they can tell you a thousand reasons why you should say yes and buy the thing that they do right now. As Dave said, they're a very passionate advocate. They speak with credibility. They are phenomenally effective if they're in the meeting. But the question is, how'd you get in the meeting? Oh, I don't know. I had to make a certain number of outbound touches to establish a certain number of connections, to identify some qualified opportunities, to eventually secure a meeting with a decision maker. See, in the meeting is not the problem, right? It's getting the meeting and driving that machine that our industry does not do universally well. And if we don't learn how to do that, we are going to get left behind.
So I gotta make sure that we get this other point in here, because this was data that I was super passionate about. And for those who are looking, this was slide 13. Paul talked about profitability around managed services providers. And he was looking at both bottom quartile, median, and best in class since 2008 to through the data for 2018. And he makes the statement, and the data says this, that there is no empirical data supporting the worry that either cloud or commoditization or both is depressing financial results of MSP. There is no evidence of profit erosion. Median grew profitably in 2018, as did the top and bottom quartile MSPs. We hear all the time about, oh my gosh, commoditization is killing us. There is no data that says that. We'll not argue that you may feel price pressure. It could be internal. It could be external. But the financial data is not saying that that is changing anybody's profitability. And that, for me, is a big headline to when you're feeling that pressure, go the data says the profitability is not only still there, it's what everybody's doing. Oh, and by the way, that's in both, not just the best in class, but those median and even the bottom. So it's across the market.
What's interesting for me about this is that it shows how intelligent business owners are, because here's what's happening. What's behind that perception is the cost of data storage has gone down. It's since, we started keeping track of it, right?
Right.
It's literally 1% of what it was 20 years ago. The cost of commodities like processors and memory has gone down. The price point for things like Office 365 has gone down. So what's going up? What's going up is that we are bundling this stuff and we're selling it at a premium point bundled with services. And we've maintained that price point since day one. In fact, most people are quoting numbers per user that are way higher than they were 15 and 20 years ago. So, we have figured out I need to make X number of dollars. So I don't care what it costs me. The connection between what we pay for something and what we charge for it has disappeared with the cloud. And that is a beautiful, beautiful thing. I like to say when I make presentations that markup, is a 20th century concept that we don't use anymore.
Right. Well, then the funny thing about it is and because everybody was all worried that all cloud is going to make IT support go away. It's like, well, that initially isn't true, but I've quipped this over and over again. Find me any technology that sells it itself as, well, this will not actually help you be more reduce costs. Everything we've ever sold always talks about how it's going to be better and easier and cheaper and all of those things. Yet all of the data says that the spend goes up and the investment goes up. There's a difference between the marketing message and the reality.
Well, and there's
I'm a big cloud guy. Don't get me wrong, but that doesn't mean that all the profitability is going away.
No, you're right, and there's also a difference between the pushback you feel from your customer versus your ability to justify the value of the things that you sell. If you know how to sell value, and if you can connect the inputs you deliver to the business results that they enjoy, if you can make that connection, you can win these deals based on value. I remember standing on a stage in 2006 and saying, we were so early in the evolution of the managed services marketplace that it was utterly irresponsible to have a price-based conversation. We just didn't have the market maturity. There was no reason to do that. I have said that same thing every single year since then, and it comes down to one basic thing. All discounts are voluntary in a healthy marketplace. You choose whether or not you're giving these things away at lower prices, because the alternative is, you know what, Mr. Customer? I understand you'd like to do this less expensive. I understand you want my valuable services for a fraction of the price. And the answer is, I'm sorry, that's not what we do, but you might be able to find somebody else who doesn't know how to sell on value who will give you that deep discount. Every single year in this study, what you see is discounts are voluntary and commoditization is something that, if you're feeling it, you might be bringing it on yourself because you're not positioning on value. Now, that might be a group hug moment here for our industry. You might need a little bit of a hug to feel better, but the market reality says you can charge more for your services than you presently are if it's packaged properly, if it's marketed properly, and you can sell it to a real decision maker.
Yeah, so I will admit, you know, there's a lot to chew on here. I'm definitely encouraged. The market data looks pretty good. I don't look back and say I wish I'd put 10 money into a product centric business and rather than a managed services business. But that's a personal choice,
right?
Versus the actual data on that, and I will observe that just as a quip from that perspective.
Right. I would echo that and say, I'm not willing to work as hard as it takes to make money in a product-centric business. So
that's also fair.
I'll point back to one more piece of data in here that I think makes the optimal story, right? If you look at slide 28, where it says, what's the impact over time of the market dynamics on the actual margin that you keep from product sales. And there's good times and bad times in the marketplace. You know, sometimes it's more or less competitive to sell products. And by the way, people keep saying, oh, there's no more money in hardware. You can't make money selling hardware. Read slide 28. And the answer is, yes, you can.
Yes, you can.
And if you can't, then that's a different conversation. But the takeaway here is that the general trend over time is that the product industry continues to feel more pressure on product margin. Whereas over time, the service industry and our ability to sell products along with our services feels a general increase in product margin, okay? That cannot possibly be overstated in terms of its importance. If you are a managed service provider and you are not selling product because, oh, product margins are low, that just dilutes my overall earning potential, you are leaving money on the table and inviting the competition into your install base, because the data shows if you run services and you sell products, you actually get higher margin this year, next year, the year after on all the product you sell, because these people trust you.
Yeah.
And you are the service provider.
I'll say you're not wrong. But my thought on this is know the added complexity.
Yes.
You know, there's an added complexity, and I'm okay if you choose not to embrace that. I'm okay with that. More importantly, you need to be okay with that in terms of your execution. If you're working your plan, I'm good with that. Work your plan as aggressively and as you know, and with a focus on operational procedures and operating and scaling it and working your plan to your goals. Know that it's not one or the other. It's whatever mix you want to do.
Yeah, it's voluntary. And if you're voluntarily not selling hardware, please go have a lunch meeting with the CIO and with the CFO and you get them to tell you who else is selling into your account, because I guarantee the competition is in the hen house.
Sadly, we could do this for another hour, but what we encourage you to do is we're going to, again, have a link to that. Go watch the webinar. Send some questions to Joe and to Paul. But if you have any other questions, we are happy to take them. So look in the show notes, fill out the form, give us your feedback, give it a thumbs up on Apple and wherever else you listen. And please, if you enjoyed this, share it with your friends.
Looking forward to the next time.
Next time on the Killing It, podcast.
Thanks for tuning in to the Killing It podcast. Please share with your friends and tell everyone to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, and all the podcast places. Join us next week and help us keep killing it in the technology business.